This is fresh air. How dare you even think that? That's what John Preston's grandmother said when she accidentally discovered a pornographic story he'd written. But that's part of what an artist does, express the thoughts that others may try to repress. Preston's pornographic novels have a big gay following. Pornography represents just one facet of his work. He's a gay activist, essayist, and editor who has recently compiled anthologies featuring gay men writing about their families and their hometowns. His recent book, Flesh and the Word, is an anthology of erotic writing. Preston's papers are being collected by Brown University's John Hay Library. In the opening essay to his anthology, A Member of the Family, Gay Men Write About Their Families, Preston writes this, "I had to leave my family to be gay."
I had to leave my family because I wasn't willing to subject my much younger brothers to the potential ridicule and damage they could do if I were to be the public person I wanted to be.
Your brothers were 15 and 17 years younger than you.
Yeah.
What were you afraid would happen to them if you were out in your hometown while they were growing up?
Oh, you really have to remember that we're talking about the early 60s, when there was no context for a gay life and no context for gay activism. And the idea of being publicly identified as a homosexual at that point in time, and especially for them living in a small New England town, was impossible. It would have been quite devastating.
So you left to protect them, but you later found out that one of them thought that didn't really understand that that's why you left.
No, he didn't. And it was one of the great shocks in my life when he came to me when he was 18 years old and gave me his side of the story.
Which was what?
I had left a letter to my parents explaining that I needed to go, that I wasn't being able to do what I had to do with my life in our hometown, and accusing all of us of being quite crazy and incapable. What I didn't know was that my brother had found that letter and that he had felt that he was the one who was at fault, and that it was his fault that I had left home and abandoned him.
What couldn't you have done with living in the same town as your family?
Well, I guess the best way to answer that is to tell you what I did do. I moved to Minneapolis. Precisely because I knew no one. I had no history there. I was unfettered. And I went about recreating my own life. I became a very well-known activist in the Twin Cities. I established the first gay community center in the United States in Minneapolis. I started the first counseling center for lesbians and gay men that was federally funded. And became this part of the new people who were coming about right after the Stonewall Revolution about 25 years ago. But I also did it with a great deal of, I can't say flamboyance. That probably has too many other connotations. But I did it without restriction. I was on television. I was in the daily newspaper. I picketed. I did all those wonderful things that young activists do with their surge of self-righteousness.
Now, you've since moved back to New England, where you're from, and you've also recently edited an anthology about homecomings, about people who have returned back. What brought you back, not to your hometown, but back to New England?
Well, there are two primary motivations. One was that about 12 years ago, it became obvious that I might be able to make my life as a writer, and that is who I wanted to be. And I had lived in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, gone to college in Chicago. To be a writer, though, the cities had ceased to be any kind of stimulation, and they were an enormous distraction. I needed to calm life down. I chose Portland, Maine, which I felt, very correctly, it turns out, was the smallest city I could live in. But I also needed to go back to New England. And I wanted very much to go back to New England. As exciting as my life had been, when I lived in other places, I was never at home. I never felt quite comfortable. I had given up too much in my need to construct a gay life, it seemed. And sometimes you just get to the place where a friend of mine finally said, about living in California, the ocean's on the wrong side. And you can't really describe it much better than that. But the ocean's on the right side in Portland, Maine.
Now, you've written a lot of pornography, and to a lot of people, that's just the lowest form of literature that there is. You obviously don't agree with that. What do you think the importance of pornography is?
Well, I think, I think there's so many different ways in which it's important. You know, although I have to admit that I started writing pornography precisely because I didn't think it was important. I had to be taught by readers that it was. I decided, well, I'll write some pornography and no one will pay attention to it. And so I began, the first piece of fiction I ever wrote was became the first chapter in a novel called Mr. Benson. And I was convinced that, you know, this was like a free down in a game or something. No one would ever notice I had done it. But it immediately became this cult classic. And I was living in New York at the time, and I discovered going to work that people were wearing T-shirts looking for Mr. Benson. And so I thought, well, my God, I have to take this very seriously, don't I?
The pornography you write is filled with kind of S&M scenarios. Can you talk a little bit about why you gravitated to that kind of writing?
Well, mainly because that's where drama is. There's a great drama to the workings of submission and domination, and I'm fascinated by them. I'm fascinated by how people do them, and I'm fascinated by what happens to them. Writing for me is an exploration. As much as anything else. And it's an exploration of my own and other people's fantasies.
There's something, I think, very disturbing about a lot of sadomasochistic fantasies and sadomasochistic pornography. I mean, it has to do with degradation and with violence, even if it's only the image of violence. Have you ever been disturbed by your own fantasies?
I actually wouldn't. I wouldn't consider a novel successful if there weren't a scene that gave me a stomachache.
Why?
Well, because it means that I hadn't been pressing any boundaries, and I wasn't really exploring anything. I probably write pornography the way other people consume it, read it. You know, it's there to excite me, and. And to help me define what the edges are and the places beyond which I wouldn't go.
So would you go places in your writing that you wouldn't go in real life?
Oh, sure. I absolutely. I mean, you know, my friend Anne Rice has written a lot of pornography as well, has a great statement about that. Pornography is a place you visit. It's not a place you live.
My guest is writer, editor, and activist John Preston. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer John Preston. You have a really interesting essay that was reprinted in an anthology called High Risk. Mm-hmm. And this was the beginning of the essay was about how you had written your first pornographic short story, and you'd foolishly left it on the kitchen table where it was soon discovered by your grandmother, who read it. And after she read it, she said to you,
"How dare you think these things?"
Yeah. And what was your response to that? How dare you think these things?
I was horrified. I mean, I felt totally shamed. I felt I had done something just horrible in even thinking these things. She tore up that story, by the way, in front of me. And I didn't write fiction again until Mr. Benson.
How many years was that?
Oh, boy. 20.
And you think that has to do with the fact that your grandmother was so upset and had torn it up?
Oh, it certainly told me how dangerous it was going to be to have thoughts like that on paper.
How did the AIDS epidemic change your writing? How did you try to bring safe sex into the pornography you were writing?
Well, when all this happened, my immediate response was to do two books on safe sex, to eroticize safe sex. Hot Living and Safe Sex, The Ultimate Erotic Guide. An easy time with all of that. My hard time came about 5-6 years ago when I got my own AIDS diagnosis. And in my crisis, in response to that, it wasn't that erotica necessarily was something I stopped writing, but I stopped writing for 2 years. And I discovered that one of the things that I was being deprived of in my panic over my diagnosis and so forth was any form of erotic life and imagination. So actually, I used erotica at that point as one of the ways in which I came back into living again and to not being not surrendering my life. I also did use that point to do a lot of my most serious writing and did an anthology called Personal Dispatches, Writers Confront AIDS. And that was important to me because that was a collection of those essays that I, as a person with AIDS, initially couldn't stand to read. They were too painful, and they made life much too bleak. But they were also too real.
You actually went back to find one of your forebears, I guess we could call him. And this is somebody who had written homosexual pornography under a pen name.
Right.
And he wrote under the name Phil Andros, and his real name was Samuel Stewart. How did you find him? And did he give you any advice? Or
he had been one of the great heroes of gay life for a long, long time, and his work has come in and out of print over the last 25 years. And I discovered that Phil Andros was this man named Samuel Stewart, who now lived in, and still does live in Berkeley, California. That information was some of the most exciting pieces of information I've ever gotten in my life, that this person actually existed and I could get a hold of him. It took a lot of work. I can't remember how I tracked him down. But I did, and we started to write each other, and I read some of his work that had been published under his own name, and he had been a protege of Gertrude Stein's. So, and quite a literary figure in his youth. And I eventually went to Sam to visit him. I spent a couple weeks doing an oral history of his life, and we quite fell in love with each other. And he had believed that his life was going to go totally unnoticed. And so he has all these wonderful things. He's always collected memorabilia. My favorite is he has a tuft of Rudolph Valentino's pubic hair. But anyhow, he at the end of it, for him to have young men suddenly coming to visit him and to care about his life and to encourage him to write his autobiography, which I and some others did and which was eventually published, just astonished him. But he was also an enormous fan of my writing, and so we had a ritual where he tattooed me, and it was the passing of the torch from Phil Andros to Mr. Benson, and it's I have a quill dipping into a pink triangle on my chest.
That's an interesting symbol.
Yeah, he came up with it. He had been a tattoo artist for a significant part of his life.
That's really interesting. I think your work would be a lot more socially acceptable if you called it erotica and not pornography. What's the difference to you? Is there one?
The only difference is the packaging. I don't believe that I have never in my life, as much as I've read it, heard any distinction between erotica and pornography that has anything to do with anything but price. And I totally reject that there's any difference between them at all. I think that Flesh and the Word has been quite well received as a work of erotica, and to a certain extent that amuses me because it began, all the separate pieces were in, most of them were in magazines, which would be immediately labeled pornography. And there is nothing in that translation from pornography to erotica that has anything to do with anything but packaging.
Well, some people think that erotica is a more kind of loving and gentle thing, whereas pornography is more vulgar.
I don't buy any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't. I mean, there can be a great deal of vulgarity in heterosexual marriage, and there can be a great deal of elegance in S&M porn. None of these kinds of distinctions work for me. And so I'm much more comfortable sticking with Anne Rice, and we both are pretty adamant about saying that we're pornographers.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
John Preston's recent anthologies include A Member of the Family, Gay Men Write About Their Families, Hometowns, Gay Men Write About Where They Belong, and Flesh and the Word, all published by Dutton. There's also a new edition of his cult classic, Mr. Benson. This is Fresh Air.